Let's go to Colonel. Andy, if you want to grab that microphone a little closer to you and
okay.
Say hello to all the people that have come to see you.
Well, I appreciate everyone that came to see me. I live with my daughter, Sandra Lee, and she does everything for me. She's my caregiver. I enlisted in the United States Navy in October 1943. That's when I qualified on the USS Finback SS-230. And all of a sudden, a lieutenant came to me that was assigned to the ship, says, "Andy, you're going to be the helmsman." And I looked at that lieutenant and I says, "Sir, I've never driven a car in my life. Not alone can I drive this." But I did fine. I enjoyed every minute of it because I was in the conning tower all the time with the captain who was at the periscope. On our 9th war patrol, we were patrolling off the Bono Islands in the South China Sea. And all of a sudden, we got a message from Pearl Harbor submarine base to cease what we're doing and go to the island of Chichijima, which we went on lifeguard duty. Chichijima was the island next to Iwo Jima, which we were going to invade. And Chichijima was the island, was the largest radio station for the entire Japanese in the South Pacific. So the first aircraft that came in, and we received a message from the aircraft carrier that a plane was shot down. And we maneuvered into the lagoon area, and the shore battery started opening up on us. And we zigzag in, and all of a sudden we saw this wet individual. And there were three of us that went to the after deck of the submarine. And I reached over, and a man behind me was holding my underwear so I wouldn't fall into the Pacific Ocean. And I pulled this man aboard, soaking wet. And later on, I found out his name was Lieutenant Junior Grade George Herbert Walker Bush, who became the 41st President of the United States. I said, "Well, that's fine." Now we got another message the following day that there was a pilot shot down over Iwo Jima, and we maneuvered in. However, the shore batteries were too close, opening up on us, and we turned around, and this is the first time in naval history a rescue was ever operated this way. We went out to sea, surfaced, and the bosun's mate tied a lanyard onto the periscope. We submerged, turned around, and went back into the island of Iwo Jima in the lagoon, and the pilot saw the periscope and grabbed the lanyard and pulled himself toward the periscope, and the captain saw him, and then we turned around and went back out to sea. We surfaced, and there he was, hanging onto the periscope. And we lowered the periscope down. The boatswain's mate pulled him off, took him down in the wardrobe and cleaned him up. And then we picked up another pilot the same day, also a radio man and a tail gunner. And that was the end of our rescue for that particular submarine service. And after the war was over, I was stationed on the USS Fulton, a submarine tender, which was in Guam. And I guess the Japanese didn't know that there was a surrender. And they were coming out of their caves, firing at everybody. And all of a sudden, they finally realized the war was over. And then we got orders to go on to the port of Washington, state of Washington. We stayed there a couple of weeks, and I was glad to get out of there because there was a lot of snow and what have you. And we ended up in San Diego. And in January 1946, my enlistment came up, and I says goodbye to the Navy. And I went home. I played baseball for a while in the minor leagues for the St. Louis Cardinals as a pitcher at Gannett, Pennsylvania in the minor league A team. And I finally got hurt, and that was the end of my baseball career. So I went and worked in the steel mill in Braddock, Pennsylvania. And there were two young men who joined the Army Reserve and wanted me to join. So I joined the Army Reserve because, well, let's face it, they gave me a corporal stripes, two stripes on my sleeve, big deal. So all of a sudden, the Korean War broke out, and my unit was called to active duty, and we opened up Fort Rucker, Alabama, which is a permanent installation now, where the Army Aviation is. And all we did there, no training whatsoever, we cleaned up the entire post. After we got it clean, we got orders to go to Fort McClellan, Alabama. And when we got to Fort McClellan, Alabama, I was still a corporal. And in 1951, I was a first sergeant. So, you know, if any can do it, anybody can do it. And then all of a sudden, I says, well, there's much further to go. So I says, well, I'm going to apply for Officer Candidate School. So I applied for Officer Candidate School and was accepted and was commissioned as second lieutenant at Fort Benning, Georgia, the infantry school. I was an infantry officer, and lo and behold, I found out where Korea was. There it was. I'm still waiting for that supply officer who said, Lieutenant, your sleeping bags and your food will be here at 6 o'clock tonight. I'm still waiting for it. And if I ever see him, look out. He better duck. All right, then when I left Korea, then all of a sudden, I get orders to go to South Vietnam. Where is that at? I don't have no idea. Well, in March 26, 1967, I'm in one furious battle, which is Easter Sunday, and the VC had us all pinned down like you don't know what. We couldn't move. I had two battalions. Every time they would move, a machine gun would open up on the left flank and then on the right flank. And I had a forward air controller, Bart 96. He always wanted to go with me on operations, and I loved him dearly, because he helped me many, many times. So I says to Bart, I says, Bart, what do you have up there? He says, well, I'll get back to you. He says, he came back and he says, I got two aircraft up here. They got 500-pound bombs on them. I says, Bart, I can't take them. I'm too close. He says, well, by the time they get back to Tansanut and unload and reload, it'll be hours before they get here, if they even get here. Besides, not only that, it's time for the bar to open up. So I says, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell everybody to get down, and then I'll tell you when to bring them in. And then I put everybody down, but I'm the only stupid individual that's standing up. And Bart, the fat, comes back to me and he says, where do you want them? And I couldn't think where I want them. I was frustrated. And he says, do you want that cemetery over there? I says, yeah, that's it. There's a machine gun on the left flank and one on the right flank. But make sure they don't drop any bombs on that cemetery, otherwise we better all kill ourselves. So they came in, and I says, when they've dropped their bombs, have them spray the tree line with 20 millimeter. Well, they came in and dropped that bomb, and those machine guns, the first one went up in the air, the second one up in the air, not a tombstone moved. And they came around and sprayed the tree line with 20 mic, and then flew up, and their right wing went like this, goodbye. Well, stupid me, I was standing up there watching it, and all of a sudden my radio man comes to me and he says, sir, you're bleeding. I says, no, I'm not bleeding. He says, yeah, your eye's bleeding. So I put my hand up my eye and I looked at it and I says, oh, you're right, I'm bleeding. Well, after the operation, I went into an airfield where a medic took care of me, but today I'm almost completely blind in that left eye. And if it wasn't for my daughter to show me where to go and what to do and feed me and clothe me and bathe me and all that, I don't know what I would do.
She wants you to stop now.
Oh.
She's going. You know, I'm going to get back to you because I want to get to Ken, but I'm going to say it because you're thinking it. I had no idea that the 41st president of the United States was saved by a wedgie. Right? There's a young man here, and I'm looking right at you, and you know you were thinking that. I mean, God bless America. Do you still have the pair of underwear? That could be worth something. In fact, Keith wants to put them on display here at History of Colorado. Would you put something on display like that? See?
I have no idea what I did with them. Right now, I'm wearing the VH underwear.
We don't want to know what you're wearing right now. And neither does your daughter. And I'm going to say this, too. At least you're not going commando. Okay. You didn't think this was going to be part funny, did you? You thought you were going to be bored and fall asleep. The kid was like, why do I got to come? Okay.